White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
The Dave Ellswick Show, Talk Radio 1310 Kicks, and 7 degrees in Grand Forks, 9 degrees out at the Air Force Base. Looking for a low tonight of 5 below, but then the temperatures are going to rise towards daybreak. And we'll have a southeasterly wind tonight at right between 10 and 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, snow is likely, some freezing rain perhaps mixed in with that, and a high of 20. Southeasterly wind at 10 to 20. Precipitation chances 60% for tomorrow. I'm sure you're familiar with the story about John Rocker and his interview with Sports Illustrated and Sports Illustrated reporting on some of the remarks that he made about gays and blacks and all kinds of stuff. And Rocker had an interview last night with ABC and talked with ESPN. That's who he talked with, ESPN, ABC, synonymous, just to let you know. He talked with Peter Gambles, if I'm not mistaken. Is it Gammons? That's who he talked with. And he said from his home in Macon that he apologized, repeating that he is not a racist. He says, if I was a racist, would I want a black guy living in my house? And would I invite him to come over to my house? I did that three times over. Other than a brief written statement, the interview marked the first time that Rocker spoke publicly about the controversy. He said he just lost his cool and said things he didn't mean about New York fans because he wanted, quote, to inflict some emotional pain in retaliation to the pain that had been inflicted on me. He said he was frustrated by New York Yankees fans who threw batteries at him during the World Series. He said Mets fans spit in his face, poured beer on him, and beat a likeness of him during the NLC. I'll reiterate again and apologize one more time to anybody I've offended, Rocker said. It certainly was not my intent. In the Sports Illustrated interview, Rocker said he would never play for a New York team because he didn't want to ride a train, quote, next to some queer with AIDS, unquote. He also bashed immigrants, saying, quote, I'm not a very big fan of foreigners. How the hell did they get in this country, unquote. While driving in Atlanta during the interview, Rocker spit on a toll machine and mocked Asian women. He asked what he would think if someone else made similar comments. He said, I think he was a complete jerk. Who the heck does this guy think he is mouthing off like this? What kind of experiences does he have to talk from? Unquote. Rocker said to reaction, his remarks already has forced his family to change its phone number twice. He has hidden in the back of a van to avoid photographers and TV cameras outside his home. But he thinks that his life eventually will return to normal. You know, you hit one home run in the big leagues, it doesn't make you a home run hitter, Rocker said. Quote, to make one comment like this doesn't make you a racist. Now, most people are happy to see that John Rocker has apologized for the remarks that he has made. But that is not the case with Tom Metzger, who is the head of the White Aryan Resistance. And Tom, you're not pleased that Rocker's backed off his remarks. Is that true?
I'm not pleased with any white man that says what he thinks and then backs down because of monetary pressure or whatever.
Do you think that he was right in what he said?
I think it was his opinion, no matter what it is, whether it's not right or wrong or what. Every American has the right to free speech in this country, supposedly. But unfortunately, when they speak, many times they lose their jobs and everything else, especially white men. So most of what he said that I could see about riding a subway in New York is absolutely true because I've ridden the subways in New York.
Yeah, but you would agree with me, Tom. I've ridden the subways in New York also, and yeah, there are people there that you don't really want to sit next to, but over and above that, most of the people are very normal, average Americans that are on that subway with you.
Well, I think what he's comparing it to is the kind of lifestyle they have riding a subway in New York and what it may be in a small town in Georgia, and obviously there's no comparison.
Yeah, you know, he made one other statement that I haven't been able to track down that I sure would like to. He said that there was a SWAT team sniper behind every light tower in Yankee Stadium during the World Series to protect the ball players and to protect the fans from the wackos there.
I watched that interview too, and that was certainly interesting, and not out of bounds of the way things are today, because any person that's in the public limelight has to pretty much almost have a bulletproof vest with them.
Well, Tom, now you're the head of the White Aryan Resistance. What organization, what does your organization stand for?
Well, what we are is an association of independent people from all walks of life who associate on the issue of race and the best interests of the white race, white and the white working class in this country. And we may disagree on some issues, but on the main issue of whatever is the best in the best interest of the white people, we're for. And
right,
what's
everybody a white person that belongs to this group?
Yes, they are. It's not belonging or even being a member. It's just associating together and networking together.
And
our people wear no uniforms, and we have no rallies and marching in the street and things like that.
Okay, so you got this loose knit group that you have that you all basically share the same belief about. Of pushing white rights, whatever that means. Does that mean that no one that's of color, of any color, could also join this group or be part
of
this group?
No, we'd send them down the street to other types of associations of blacks or whatever. Obviously, they should be working for the best interests of their own race, the same as we should be. Now, that does not mean that I don't have a lot of network communication with non-white people every day. I'm in communication with non-white people and ask me various questions, and we dialogue. And in my community, I, of course, in business, I meet a lot of people of color, and we talk, and we have business together and so forth like that. But in my philosophy is to the advancement of the white race.
Well, you know, now if we do this with every race, Tom, isn't that going to be really divisive in this country if every race is like pushing their own agenda?
Well, that's evolution. That's what it's been doing for millions of years. Diversity is the name of the game. The races have been dividing over periods of thousands and thousands of years and going their way and developing in the way they develop. If we had gone the other way, the whole earth would simply be one group of brown-skinned people. But evolution, in its intelligence, has seen fit to make us struggle and become various sub-races of the human species.
Well, what do you mean by sub-races?
Sub-races, yeah. In other words, divisions of the human species.
Okay, so the human species is directed into sub-species like white people, black people,
Asian people, right. And that's the way we've developed, and it worked pretty good for a long, long time, but now there are people who are social experimenters that think they know best.
Okay, and how do you mean by that? What do you mean by social experimentation?
Well, billions and billions of dollars are being spent in this country, either convincing by carrot and a stick or actual force to push miscegenation and the integration of the races and the amalgamation of the races.
You're saying there's $1 million being spent to convince white guys to marry, what, black women, Asian women, Hispanic women, and vice versa?
Well, you don't necessarily have to have a big sign on TV say marry each other. All you have to do is integrate the communities, integrate the schools, integrate the churches, and so on. And the social experimenters figure that ultimately they will mix, and they will. Whenever two races exist side by side, eventually they will mix.
What's wrong with that? I mean, it seems like to me that means that they're getting along.
Getting along is not the greatest prerequisite for a vibrant civilization. In fact, civilizations that have a lot of internal struggle usually excel beyond places where people are sitting around under a tree eating a banana. The British Empire and European countries have shown that. I mean, they had tremendous internal struggles among themselves, but at the same time they were tremendously creative and militarily powerful and so forth.
And you think that that's going to die out if the races and somehow mix together?
Well, what is actually happening is that the elitist of the economic world, transnational corporations, and I must say, unfortunately, the percentage of white leaders that we have in this country that control so much of the money have decided they want one big worldwide transnational corporation plantation. And one good way to keep everybody docile is to try to mix them all together, educate them downward, and then there'll be a small elite control all the wealth of the world, and the rest of us will be totally peons. And miscegenation is one of the methods they use.
I don't see how that works, Tom. I mean, Tom, that seems like to me at that point, if it's power from companies and things of that nature, they don't care if you're white, black, green, or yellow. They just want workers.
I know, that's the thing, and they want them as cheap as they can get them, and if they can breed you down to a dull-witted type person, then they're ahead of the game, if they can destroy labor unions and everything else. If you go to countries that have been mixing for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years, you will see a labor force that's much worse shaped than the blacks were on the plantation.
So what you're saying is, as far as the white race goes, if we allow ourselves to intermarry in other races, we're going to find ourselves losing our creative and intellectual edge.
That's true, and we will lose the control of one great continent, and that is North America. And this will become an expanded banana republic of some time that will be ruled over by an elite class, and many of those will be white people, but their interests are not our interests.
Well, does that mean, Tom, that we're supposed to close our borders to anybody who's not white?
Well, if you go back to the 50s when I was in school, we were told that if we limited our white population or our population, that this country would be much better off. We would mechanize much faster. Our technology would grow much faster. We would have far more wide open space. We'd have great parks for everybody to go and everything like that. And so the white people said, okay, we limited our population. And then the government said, okay, now that you've limited your population, we're going to open the borders and fill the country up with non-whites from the third world. And that's what they've done. And, of course, we should have said, okay, fine, we'll limit our population, but you seal the borders.
Now, see, I've never was taught that in school, and I graduated back in 71, and I never heard that being stated about, as white folks, we were supposed to limit our population. I heard them say that the United States overall should, all of us, white, black, or Hispanic, or whatever, we all should be limiting how many children we had in our family.
Yes, we know. That's the way they said it. But it primarily, since the white race was the majority, definitely at that time, they were talking about the white race. The black race, it's very doubtful it's possible for those people to limit their population.
You think that's doubtful?
I think it's doubtful that they're capable of limiting their population.
You don't think they have control over their own sexuality?
I think we're wired differently, and I think that if you look at countries and continents that are populated by black people, you'll see that it's almost impossible to get them to limit their population. And I think it's the same way with mestizos, Indian type south coming from south of the border and so forth, and to a degree the Asians. I think the white man is the only one who's ever been responsible enough to limit his population.
It's 7 degrees here in downtown Grand Forks, 9 degrees out at the Air Force Base, looking for increasing clouds overnight, a low of about 3 below zero, then an early rising temperatures, wind becoming southeasterly 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, snow is likely, maybe a little mixed with freezing rain, and a high of 20. I'm Dave Ellswick. We'll be back with Tom Metzger. We'll open up the phones. You can talk with him here on the Dave Ellswick Show on Talk Radio 1310 KNOX.
It's cold in here.
I came to find Tom Metzger when I saw a story saying that he was praising Rocker, John Rocker, who made the derogatory comments regarding foreigners, gays, Asians, and then got out and apologized last night on television. Now, Metzger praised Rocker for speaking out against racial mixing, but he says he has no respect for the man because he caved in when, quote, politically correct types, unquote, cried foul. And according to Tom Metzger, he claims Rocker has the potential to be a good racist, but his unwillingness to stand by his comments shows he has a long way to go before, quote, he can carry the jockstrap, unquote, a baseball legend and well-known racist Ty Cobb. Now, Tom, did you really say all that?
Absolutely did. Yeah, Ty Cobb, you wouldn't have had to talk to him very long to find out where he was coming from.
Well, he played the game when it was all white. Do you think he wouldn't have played the game now?
Well, I don't know. He might have changed. He might be differently if it was today. But I must say that he was very strong in many ways, and racially was one of them. Of course, like you would say, a majority of the country were pro-white back in those days.
Well, let's open the phone lines up, Tom, and let my listeners talk with you. Is that all right?
Sounds good.
All right, 775-5559 is our local number, 775-5559, star 1310 on your Cellular One cell phone, and 1-800-726-0092. And your opportunity to talk with Tom Metzger. He is the head of the White Aryan Resistance, and you can talk with him about anything you've heard him say in the first half hour of the show today. And his view that John Rocker, even though he made some, as far as I'm concerned, Tom, the most despicable comments I've ever heard come out of a person's lips.
I hear him on every street corner and every bar.
You hear this all the time?
All the time. You go down to a working class a place where they meet, or a bar, beer bar, wherever you want to go, and you hear this stuff all the time.
So you're telling me that the racist... And the racial temperature in this country is just below flashpoint.
Absolutely. It's always just below the skin level. It's just right there, ready to flashpoint.
All right, 775-5559. What do you think? Give you the opportunity to talk with Tom Metzger here on the Dave Elswick Show on Talk Radio 1310 KNOX. Tonight, clear early, followed by increasing clouds. It's until 5. 775-5559 is our local number. 775-5559, star 1310 on your Cellular One cell phone, and 1-800-726-0092, free long distance. I'm talking with Tom Metzger, who is the head of the Aryan White Resistance here on the Dave Elswick Show. His name came to my attention because of some comments he made about John Rocker, and because he apologized, I guess you considered him being gutless. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, I think white people should stand up and say what they've got to say and stick with it and quit being so hypocritical.
Well, let me ask you this, Tom. I'm going to ask you from my own point of view here. I dated Asian women when I was younger and was engaged to one at one time, and things just didn't work out not because of our races, because of other things within our belief systems. And, you know, if I met a black woman that was, that I found becoming and liked what she believed in, and I wanted to marry her, I would. It wouldn't make any difference to me at all. Am I a traitor to my race?
Well, I'll send you a busload of them up from down here. We'd be glad to get you all the black women you want.
Well, I'm just asking, am I a traitor to my own race?
In a sense, yes, of course.
Why am I?
Well,
I
travel, and I spent a couple of weeks recently in Japan. Met some very, very nice people. It's a very respected type country, respectful and very homogeneous. And there were a lot of women there that were attractive and so forth. But I stick with my race, and that's and
why, you know, Tom, I don't understand why. If you found one attractive, and you hooked up with them emotionally and intellectually, what would hold you back from going further with them?
Because it's not what is the best thing for your race to mix it with another race. And it is also an insult to white womanhood, and it's an insult by her to her Asian background.
Oh, now wait a second. Now I'm going to ask the white women in my audience right now, if I married an Asian, am I insulting you?
Well,
I'm insulting the women.
Of course,
women here?
Of course. You're saying that you'd have to go out of your way to find an Asian woman you get along with when there's white women all over the place.
If I happen to meet a white woman that I hooked up with, I might have. I married a white woman.
But good.
If I had married an Asian woman because I had hooked up with her before and we got along as well as I do with my wife right now, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, if you're thinking just at that level, I guess I could have a sheep out here too, and we'd get along pretty good. But the point is, in evolution, the best of the race is not accomplished by mixing the races. To improve your race, you don't downbreed.
Now, wait a second. Now, with that statement, you're saying that the white race is the superior race, and if we marry any other race, then what we're doing is we're going down.
Well, number one, any type of racial mixing, marrying, is downbreeding. You could take it any way you want. Now, I would hope the white race...
I want, Tom, you to explain that to me. How is that downbreeding?
The white race is the creator of Western civilization. Everything, nearly everything that you have today, and every the microphone you're talking on, everything that you take for granted was a creation of the mind of the people of your race, the white European race.
And they
were able to...
start talking like this, you remind me of the Russians who said it was Russians who invented everything, and the guys that were over here in the United States, we didn't do anything. They took credit for everything. Now, you're taking credit for a lot of work that black people, Asian people, Native American people have done as well.
Well, let's look in the Encyclopedia of Technology and look around and see how it breaks down as far as the major inventions and creations of our Western civilization. And you'll find that the white race is has created 85 to 90% at least of the technology that we have today. Asians are...
Have you been to MIT lately, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology?
Well, my father was...
No, Tom, answer my question. Have you been there lately?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, that's evident because you would find how many Asian Americans are there. And
well, why...
Of course...
Of course, the Asians are flooding in and getting into those schools and so forth, but I know people in these positions that will tell you that they're not that good at many of the things that they are boasting about as far as programming and so forth.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mark, you're up here on the Dave Ellswick Show on Talk Radio 1310 KNOX.
Hi, Dave.
Hey.
I've sat here for 5 minutes and listened to try to get a basis. A foundation of what this guy believes, and all I've heard for the past 5 minutes is his opinion. Now, we all know what opinions are. Everybody, you know, opinions are like armpits. Everybody has two, and they both stink.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a racist. How does that do you?
No, what I want is a foundation. I want something that's foundation, that's grounded, that I can say, and it's not just Tom's opinion, and it's not just the person who you got the information from, their opinion.
Well, what do you want? Ask a specific question.
Foundation. I want your basis on what you say that the white race. Now let me go ahead and preface this because you might not be able to tell over the phone. I'm white, but I want your basis on what makes the white race supreme. You yourself, let's use your statistics, 85 to 90% of the technology was invented by white people. I find that a little skewed, but are you saying that white people are perfect?
Are perfect?
Yeah.
Of course not. We fight like hell among ourselves. That's got nothing to do with it.
I just said that white people are not perfect. Therefore, your white supremacist stuff, your white perfection stuff, you yourself, you just blew any basis and any foundation that you have out of the water for yourself.
I think if you'll get the wax out of your ears, you'll hear that I said, I didn't say I was a white supremacist. I said I hope the white race is superior. It hasn't been acting that way because, like in your case, if you're a farmer up there, it looks like you're going to be flipping hamburgers to be retrained pretty soon because you've lost your government. It's out of control.
See, once again, you throw in a perception, your perception. I'm not a farmer up here. So,
I'm saying if you were.
Wait a minute. Well, let's back up here, Tom. That's your perception that you've thrown in. Your perception is the white race is supreme, is superior, which once again is wrong. Tom, is there anything else you'd like to be wrong about?
Well, what race is superior? The human race. I get that. In other words, you're a transnationalist then.
No, I'm a human being.
You're a transnationalist.
I'm a human being.
That's the easiest cop out in the world because it's the hardest thing to pin down there is.
Together with blacks, with Asians, with all the other races, I think we could have a good United States here.
Fine. I've got millions of them down here sitting in my backyard. We want to get the buses and the trains and the planes and bring them all up there to your state. And you can have all of them you want.
I tell you what, you send us the good ones, the ones that are willing to be trained, the ones that are willing to come up here and work hard, and I'll take every doggone one of them.
Work at what?
Okay, now let me...
What are you going to work at? We ship most of the manufacturing out of the country to China. I mean, what are they going to work at, McDonald's?
Excuse me, we've got about 1.4% unemployment up here in North Dakota. Once again, you're wrong. Is there anything else you'd like to be wrong about, especially here in North Dakota before I end?
God, you're so smart, fella.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call, buddy.
You're wrong about that.
Okay, Mark. Talk to you later. All right, Tom Metzger. Oh. Yes, we're taking your phone calls at 775-5559, star 1310, on your cellular.
For some people, flying is an anxious white-knuckle ride as they carry a pressing fear that the aircraft will crash. But there's another risk that may be far greater, which affects us all. It's called aerotoxic syndrome, and it's caused by breathing in contaminated cabin air. Some experts are calling it the asbestos of the airline industry. It can result in a range of serious health problems, even death. But what's most shocking is the way aircraft manufacturers and operators have known about the problem for years and have done nothing about it. January 23rd, 2006. A Cathay Pacific jumbo is flying into Hong Kong at night through a thunderstorm. On board, nearly 400 passengers and crew who don't know how close they are to disaster.
100 feet.
Piloting the giant passenger jet is Australian Ben Holmes.
I was missing a lot of things, and the aeroplane was just getting ahead of me. So when an aeroplane gets ahead of you at 8 miles a minute, it's a long way ahead of you.
There is nothing wrong with the aircraft, but Ben is losing control. His reflexes and reactions destroyed by years of breathing contaminated air in his cockpit.
I was becoming dangerous. I was really, really struggling in the final stages to keep the aeroplane where it should be.
It is the last flight Ben will ever make. Another victim of the airline industry's darkest secret.
We now realise that we were being seriously poisoned by what we were breathing and the cabin air we were breathing at work almost every day.
For Ben and all pilots and passengers, the air they're exposed to inside an aircraft is pumped into the cabin through the engine. Toxic oils and other substances in the engine can leak and contaminate that cabin air supply.
You're being exposed during these contaminated air events to hundreds of different chemicals. Those chemicals are carcinogens, they are hazardous chemicals, and they are going to cause harm to people.
For more than a decade, former British Airways pilot Tristan Lorraine has documented dozens of other pilots and flight crew who've developed serious neurological disorders because of contaminated cockpit air.
The contaminated air is affecting the pilot's ability to cognitively function. And if he starts to make mistakes, then the end result will be a plane crash.
We'll get everybody off the aircraft if we need to.
Contaminated air or fume events occur regularly on aircraft, no matter how old or new they are. They've caused near disasters like this flight into Malmö, Sweden in 1999, where both pilots were almost unconscious on landing. And fume events are also suspected in multiple aircraft crashes, like this tragedy in Greece in 2005. Where a Boeing 737 slammed into a hillside, killing all 121 passengers and crew on board.
So in all of these cases where the plane has crashed and they put it down to pilot error, I would say some of those will absolutely be due to pilots being affected by contaminated air.
It's seriously, seriously impacted the way I can live.
When Ben Holmes began his career with Cathay Pacific, he was rated in the top echelon of pilots. But in 2002, he had his first experience of contaminated air in a Boeing 747. Becoming so physically ill, he couldn't take his shift at the controls.
I was convulsing, having a almost full fits, and these were coming in waves, so one every 10 or 15 minutes. I thought I was having some sort of epileptic event. That's what it was like. It's the only way I can describe it.
But if the immediate effects were shocking, the long-term impact on Ben was even worse. He began suffering more serious health problems, including nerve and brain damage.
I had two really good doses of this stuff, and it's brought my health to the point where I can barely function.
It took barely 4 years from his first exposure to contaminated air for this former top pilot to realise he was no longer fit to fly. During that fateful night landing in Hong Kong in 2006.
100 feet.
It's like a blur. I really don't recall it very well. I recall parts very well, but I was just very sick. That's the only way I can describe it.
Were you making it up?
No.
Were you looking for a payout?
No, no, no. There's very little to gain from getting a very small payout at age 34 with two small kids and the rest of your life ahead of you. So, no, I wasn't making it up.
So how much do you miss flying?
I don't think there's a day that goes by that I don't think about getting back there, definitely. I miss being able to work. I miss going to work. Ready?
Yep.
Go.
Ben's employer, Cathay Pacific, offered him no medical assistance and eventually fired him. His health, they said, was his problem. After many years and many blood tests, it was revealed he had high levels of toxic poisons called TCPs, components of jet engine lubricating oil that had leaked into his cabin air supply on at least two different flights.
It was quite a shocking realisation to actually get those results back.
Did it make you want to pick up that bit of paper with those results and take it to the airline and say, I didn't make it up, I'm sick, this is what you did to me?
I sent those results to the airline. They just ignored them. I received no correspondence whatsoever from the airline.
No correspondence and no compassion?
No. They don't want to know about it. They don't want to know about it.
The way air circulates in a plane is a design decision. Many say flaw, made by aircraft manufacturers at the very dawn of passenger jet travel in the 1960s. It was the cheapest option then, and it has never changed.
664, speedboat 664 is ready to go. Speedboat 664.
Do you accept that these people are suffering?
I accept that there are people suffering from some symptoms and signs, whatever the origin, yes.
Do you accept that these people are suffering because of exposure to contaminated air in the planes in which they're flying?
I don't know that. I don't know.
Professor Michael Bagshaw is former Chief Medical Officer for British Airways and currently a consultant to Airbus, part of an industry which for decades has consistently refused to even install monitors on aircraft to detect and warn of contaminated air aboard.
Doesn't the airline have a responsibility to make sure that they're doing everything they can to make those planes safe, to keep those people safe?
Yes, and I think they are doing.
They're not.
So?
They're not monitoring the air.
Because there is no way of monitoring the air at the moment. But a lot of money is being spent at the moment in trying to develop monitors. The monitors do not exist at the moment. They're in the prototype stage.
Is that the heart of it, or is it that it's easier just to put your head in the sand, pretend this isn't happening?
No.
Don't incur the cost and belittle the people who claim that they have been damaged?
Certainly not.
Think about it. Every other enclosed environment, whether it be a submarine, whether it be in a deep mine, they all have contaminated air detection systems. So why doesn't an airplane have it? I would suspect it's because they know the things would be going off so often.
It's not just aircrew who are at risk. 60 Minutes conducted its own tests on random flights in Australia and internationally. In the cabins of over half the aircraft we tested, we found the residue of toxic engine oils, which passengers on those flights must have inhaled.
We've had 6 years of hell that could have been prevented.
6 years ago, Samantha Sabatino and her family were on a flight to Florida when contaminated air leaked into the cabin. She, her family, and dozens of other passengers on that flight have suffered long-term neurological and other health problems.
You've got no doubt that what you're suffering today is through exposure to contaminated air on that flight.
I have no doubt, no, not so ever. There's a lot of passengers on that plane and they've all had and all still have ongoing medical problems.
All these people, they don't know each other. The only thing in common is they're on a particular flight where there has been a fume event. Now they're all sick. 6 years on, they're all sick with very similar symptoms. How do you explain that?
I can't explain it.
Well, could one explanation be that they were poisoned?
It is an association. But we don't know that they were poisoned. We don't know that.
Tell me, what else could have happened to them?
I don't know.
Not knowing is a difficult position to maintain when even the manufacturers of the jet engine oil acknowledge its danger to health.
This product contains TCP. Overexposure to TCP by breathing of oil mist may produce nervous system disorders, including gastrointestinal disturbances, numbness, muscular cramps, and paralysis.
I accept that there are people who are unwell, and these people's health may well be being harmed by breathing in fumes, but there is no independent scientific evidence of that at the moment.
I guess the question is, what on earth are you waiting for? I mean, the oil companies continue to say that the heated product may be harmful by inhalation. They get it.
Yeah.
Why don't you get it?
Well, that is what they say, and I can't dispute what they say.
The possibility that airlines and aircraft manufacturers around the world may be poisoning their air crews and passengers is terrible enough. But more terrible still is the suspicion that those same airlines and manufacturers may have known about this problem for decades and done nothing.
If people believe that the airlines were harming people deliberately and not taking every precaution, people wouldn't fly with them.
But we have consultants like you, and excuse me if this is offensive, but very much like the tobacco industry, consultants who are paid to say, trust us, it's safe.
Can I say I find that highly offensive?
Yeah.
Because I'm afraid I do. I am not paid to defend the industry.
The view is that there is a conspiracy at work here. Are you part of that conspiracy?
Certainly not, and I don't accept there's a conspiracy.
60 Minutes has obtained this internal memo from the Boeing aircraft company dated 2007. It's all about toxic air.
Some of the events have been significant in that the crew reported blue smoke with defined waves in the smoke.
A frustrated senior Boeing inspector is raising concerns with other Boeing executives and contractors about contaminated cockpit air, which from the tone of the memo seems to be a well-recognised problem within the company.
Who knows what the byproducts are in hot synthetic turbine oil? The data sheet has warnings about breathing the fumes.
It ends on a chilling note that lives need to be lost before Boeing will act.
Bottom line is, I think we're looking for a tombstone before anyone with any horsepower is going to take an interest.
That last line, it says it all. They're treating people like a byproduct of the industry.
For Ben, this memo is proof that the industry's denial of his illness is no more than a cover-up.
To see it in black and white in an internal memo from Boeing, what's that like?
It's an admission of guilt. That's exactly what it is. What that document is saying to me is that we will keep going doing what we're doing as long as we can get away with it.
While we're all vulnerable to being affected by these toxic fumes, it appears some people, like Ben, have specific sensitivity, which makes exposure for them catastrophic.
There's no getting around it. If you're flying on an airliner, you're breathing in poisons. It's that simple.
While Boeing refused our request to speak to those named in the internal memo we obtained, it provided a statement claiming the company would never put passengers at risk by ignoring or covering up data that could point to a problem with our airplanes. You can see the rest of the Boeing statement on our website.